Chapter 22. Good help is hard to find.
I'd never before thought of a life at sea, but you make your point, Captain,
Grosh replied when asked if he would join Denric as part of his crew.
I have no trade without acting outside my guild, and who has heard of a rogue tailor? At least with you, sir, I know where I stand.
Denric nodded in acknowledgement.
That makes one of the ones I wanted, at the least.
He stood with his men arranged about him in a semicircle, and was going about finding out once and for all who was staying on with him. It was to be their last night camped among the low cliffs to Scar Harbor's south. By morning they would either be sailing as free men, or be dead. None among them wished to be recaptured.
And you, Jiminy? Denric asked.
Good coin, you say? I've got you on that one, right?
We get loot and get rich?
Jiminy asked, his priorities transparent. The wiry viper's eyes gleamed as he imagined piles of treasure, akin to the stories in Neron the King Thief, and pictured them for himself.
Better than knifing old men coming home from the tavern, certainly,
Denric replied dryly.
Learn a trade aboard ship, and you shall earn a full share of the loot. Same goes for all you lads. Work as a pirate, get paid as one.
Aye, Captain, count me in,
Jiminy replied enthusiastically. Denric was chagrined, but little surprised. It was the easiest money a lowlife like Jiminy could imagine, preying on merchants and traders who quickly became much more interested in saving their own skins than in protecting their investments. And far from the reach of any sort of law, on the open waters, it was the law of guns. Whoever possessed the most cannons was in charge.
Oh, me too, exclaimed Ander. Loot for everyone.
Everyone laughed, and Denric supposed he was stuck with Ander for the foreseeable future. Denric did not ask again, but simply turned to Tallmond and looked questioningly at him. As a man of few words himself, Tallmond understood the implied inquiry.
Yeah, sure, was all Tommen said.
But from Denric's perspective, that was all he needed to hear. Whether they would change their minds later once they found out that life aboard ship was not for everyone, and certainly was not day after day of plunder interrupted only by port calls for drinking and whoring, well, he would just wait and see how they took to it. Stalyard arrived for one final visit early in the afternoon. He seemed in good spirits as well. And why not? For his plan to take to the seas with his old captain was about to come to fruition. He was dressed more plainly than the other times he had come to them, in the plain drab brown coveralls and boots of a dock worker. He was lugging a large sack along with him.
Mr. Stalyard, good news, I hope,
Denric said as Tallmond and Grosh moved to help him unburden his load.
The best as always, Captain,
the grinning Stalyard replied.
I have brought everything we will need, and perhaps a bit more. I like games of chance, but this is no game, so I take no chances.
He chuckled at his own joke.
Dark clothing for everyone. I guessed sizes, so make the best if they do not fit as you would prefer. There are long knives for each, better than cutlasses easy to hide. Two more pistols also. My men are ready as well. We will meet at the docks an hour after sunset, and wait for my brother's signal.
Denric always admired his first mate's efficiency. With five more like him, it would little matter what dullards the rest of the crew were. Fortune being what it was, there was only one of Stalyard. He was still going to be woefully short on good men who knew their trades. His most pressing reason for bringing his Relis Island crew was simple manpower. Under normal circumstances, he would have been able to afford the luxury of picking an experienced crew, but he had need of every willing and able body he could muster.
What news from the city? Are the cannons aboard? What of the captain?
Denric peppered him with questions, his own eagerness showing through.
The captain, I'm afraid, will likely be on board. No great harm, though. We can take care of him. The new cannons are so beautiful. I seen them for myself when they load them. The news from the city, though, this shames my other little newses. The sheriff has caught a witch, He even admitted it in trial this morning. In the witch's house, there is a light that does not come from anywhere. I went for myself to see it.
So you believe them? Denric asked. This was truly news worth hearing. Denric's own powers were so limited.
A real sorcerer in Acardia? Now that might be useful.
Yes, he was not sentenced today. They wanted to get permission to execute him.
But need to ask the lords in Golis.
He's not dead yet, but he borrows his days, Stalyart replied.
What do you think, Stalyart? Denric asked him. Stalyart was among those on his crew who were aware of Denric's mystical leanings, so Denric knew that Stalyart had something more in mind when he brought him this news. Otherwise, its inclusion with the day's plans would have been nothing more than a distraction.
I think the winds are not so strong tonight. I think we take less chance by bringing this witch with us than we do trying to outrun pursuit on a calm night, Stalyart replied.
If this witch has real magic, how is it that he is kept captive? Denric asked, drawing nods of agreement from Jiminy and Grosh, who otherwise had the sense to keep out of the conversation.
He is kept shackled and gagged. They keep him so he can work not magic, Stalyart explained. I hear that even to eat, they hold a crossbow on him.
So he is unskilled, or at least unschooled. I can work with that. A fully trained sorcerer could easily escape such mundane imprisonment, which is why no one with sense takes one prisoner. Jinzan could have broken out the minute they left him alone.
How did they capture him? Denric asked, trying to get a feel for how much of a sorcerer he was dealing with.
They broke in his door in the middle of the night and took him by surprise.
Denric sat down and thought for several minutes. No one interrupted him. The look on his face was of such an obvious, calculating nature that they just waited for him to speak and then decide. Kyrus came back to the land of consciousness and found he had been returned to his cell. It was a small comfort, knowing that he was likely just awaiting the hangman's noose, or possibly a post, some rope, and a pile of firewood. His headache had improved to the point where he was thinking rationally. Importantly, he remembered everything he had dreamed, including a rather clear recollection of Rashan's spell. He just had to pick the right time to use it. He worked at the gag in his mouth, trying to dislodge it. Were he to manage that trick, the correct time would be now, and he would worry about other consequences as they came up. As it stood, the gag stubbornly refused his efforts, and he could not get his shackled hands close enough to hook his thumbs in and pull at it. He would have to settle for a blast of raw ether and hope that he did not immolate himself as the gag caught fire. That little trick was something he would save until all was quiet. Outside the cell, he could still hear people on the streets, and the constables trying to keep them away from his cell window. There were a lot of angry people out there, he knew, and in this case, at least, the constables were on his side. No escape plan would be worth its weight in feathers if he got dragged out by that mob and killed first. He was roused from his musings by footsteps approaching from down the cell block. Kyrus was no expert on the subject, but it was more than one person, and fewer than a dozen. He got a cold feeling in the pit of his stomach. Nothing good had come down that corridor of late. He was pleasantly surprised to see that it was the jailer and two men armed with crossbows. Well, he was not pleased to see them so much as the lovely young lady they had brought to see him.
Oh, Kyrus, Abelay gushed after she saw him, disheveled, unshaven, and trussed up in his cell.
She was carrying a bowl of something steaming. He also noticed that she was still wearing the jade dragon they had bought only yesterday.
One word out of you and you will find two quarrels in your throat, the jailer threatened as he unlocked the cell door.
Kyrus's eyes were drawn to the ring of keys he carried.
I do not care if it is Arcadian or witch gibberish. I shall take no chances. You will get fed and that is it.
One of the armed men loosened his gag, and then both took up positions on either side of him, weapons leveled as promised, generally at his throat. Abelay hurried over and knelt down next to him,
then started spooning stew into him. It felt wonderful in his mouth. Too hot, perhaps, but the first food he had tasted in nearly a day. And knowing that Abelay would still come to see him felt even better. The look in her eyes was haunted and worried. But she was scared for him, not of him.
"Kairos, are all those awful things they said about you true?"
she asked. Kairos shook his head between mouthfuls.
"You are a witch, though,"
she stated rather than asked. Kairos bobbed his head a bit from side to side, to try to indicate that it was not so clear a distinction. Kairos was quite mindful of the no-talking edict, and fully intended to carry on a whole conversation via head gestures if he had to.
"So you did magic, but you are not a witch?"
she asked, trying to piece together a story from the vague hints he could give. Kairos smiled and nodded. This seemed to be working. He was hungry and devoured whatever she spooned to him. But too late, he realized that his conversation was likely to last the duration of the stew. As the final spoonful made its way into his mouth, the jailer intervened.
"That is enough. We are done here."
Kairos quickly concocted a new plan. Fire hurling was supposedly quite dangerous, and he had never tried it, but it was supposedly about the simplest form of magic. He could take out the two armed guards first, then the jailer. Then he could either use Rashan's spell or get Abelay to retrieve the keys from the jailer's body. After that, he would blast a path out of the jail and out of the city, and he and Abelay could live as outlaws until Brannis read up on enough magic for him to set them up in a comfortable lifestyle out in the wilderness. After a time and a better understanding of magic, maybe he could insinuate himself back into society. Not in Scar Harbor, but perhaps in Harven or Udyr, some place where they were still under the rule of Acardia, but not so close to home. He could use magic to rise in the social ranks and do well in business, whatever business he chose, and raise a family in wealth and privilege. He could teach his children magic, and they could become the secret ruling class in the kingdom, using magic to take over and institute laws against punishing people for witchcraft. Abruptly, Kairos's planning was cut short by the gag being stuffed roughly back in his mouth, and Abelay being led from the cell. As the door was locked behind him, Abelay turned to look at him one last time.
"Do not worry, Kairos. I am sure this will all work out somehow. Oh, and do not worry about Ash. I took him home with me until this all gets figured out."
Kairos bided his time the rest of the daylight hours. The fervor of the crowd outside had waned when it became apparent after several hours that the constables were not about to allow them to storm the cell and drag Kairos out. It was not the type of crowd that would storm a prison without the tacit approval of the constables. They were the sort who liked to make a lot of noise and hope that someone else would do the whole taking the law into their own hands bit, lest they end up in a cell of their own. As near as Kairos could tell, by nightfall, all that were left outside were a pair of fresh constables who had replaced the ones from earlier. They carried on a bit of idle conversation, but otherwise proved to be uninteresting. No news of the rest of the trial or his sentence. No dropped hints of lackadaisical jailers or loose bricks that Kairos could use. He was beginning to think all the storybooks he had read were going to prove useless. He steeled himself for what might prove to be the riskiest thing he had tried in his life, and began to draw in ether. Then he started to let it out, right into the leather cord of the gag. Slowly at first, then in increasing amounts. He warmed, then heated, then practically boiled the leather.
"Hot, hot, hot. It is not burning, I am."
Kairos twisted and squirmed and could smell his own singed hair, and quickly stopped the flow of ether, instead unloading it into the door again. Tears streamed from his eyes as the burning hot cord pressed into the back of his neck, where he had tried to focus the heat. Eventually, the heat died down and became tolerable, and Kairos breathed a sigh of relief.
"Well, that was one of the worst ideas I have ever had."
He was still locked up and gagged, and now his neck hurt where the leather rubbed against burned flesh.
Time to see how picky magic is about pronunciation.
Mp, ru, abidwa, fagra, bina, behaga, vink, warunga,
he mumbled, mimicking Rashan's gesture of pressing his hands together and making little circles as he rubbed them together. At first he thought he felt something weird happening to him, but soon he realized that it was the ether building inside him with no release. He heated the doors some more to let the pressure of the ether escape him. Kyrus knew that the magic did not care one whit about the words themselves or how he spoke them. It was more a matter of the shapes they made in his mind. But Kyrus was new at this, and the words and gestures were meant to create the right thoughts. He did not know the spell well enough to skip to the end results and just cast it, knowing how it was supposed to go. Kyrus tried the spell again, this time focusing on trying to hear the words correctly in his head, even if his mouth was getting them wrong, due to entirely forgivable circumstances. Having nothing but time on his hands, Kyrus kept trying over and over as each attempt failed. He began wondering if he would be better off just trying his plan of blast everything next time someone unlocks the door. After what, by his count, was his 35th try, he was distracted by noises outside. In the clear night air, he could more clearly hear the two constables guarding him and the scant few noises of the streets.
"Mind if we have a word with your prisoner?"
The male voice came from outside, not far from Kyrus's window.
"No visitors, please step back."
The constable's voice was cut short.
"Who?"
A muffled voice began, but got no further. Kyrus heard two bodies slumped to the ground. "Get to the corner and keep a watch. We do not have much time." Kyrus heard the voice again, same as the first one. He was not sure what had transpired outside his cell, but he was leery of it. Too many people had called for his death earlier in the day for him to trust that a random stranger was less a threat to him than the men guarding his cell.
"You in there," the voice called.
Kyrus looked up to see a face peering down at him through the bars.
"Are you really a sorcerer?"
The owner of the voice had a darkly tanned face covered in salt and pepper stubble, and he wore a black knit cap pulled low. Kyrus heard the word sorcerer instead of witch, and festival bells rang in his brain. That was the Cadren term for a witch. Kyrus decided to take his chances with the user of the term less associated with public burning. He nodded enthusiastically.
"Get the back of your head as close to these bars as you can," the stranger instructed.
Kyrus struggled up onto the plank bed and stood straight, turning his back to the window.
"Kotho elextiumen viru," Kyrus heard from behind him.
Suddenly the gag was loose in his mouth. He quickly spit it out, trailing a wad of saliva with it, and worked his stiff jaw to loosen the muscles. He turned to see his benefactor just inches from his face.
"Thank you," Kyrus said. "Are you planning on getting me out of here?"
Kyrus did not ask what had befallen the constables. At that moment, he did not want to know. "Burning through that gag was about the most I can manage," the man said. "If you really are a sorcerer, now is the time to prove it. Same words I just used, and hold your fingers as close together as you can without them touching." The stranger then demonstrated the gesture. Kyrus was relieved to find that someone had discovered a spell for casting while shackled. "Focus on these bars, and once they melt through, we can pull you out."
"Kotho elextiumen veru,"
Kyrus repeated as he put his fingers close together. He drew ether and felt it flow like an arrow straight to the point in the bar he directed it. It glowed orange, but Kyrus accidentally touched his fingers together and the spell faltered.
"You must keep your fingers apart, or it will never work," his would-be rescuer told him.
"You get more power from having them closer, but touching ruins it. Find a way to get it done without ending the spell so soon." Kyrus tried again, this time with his fingers far enough apart that he could have put his nose between them, had the shackles allowed him that much freedom.
"Kotho elextiumen viru," Kyrus repeated.
The ether flowed again. The bar turned a reddish orange, but did not seem to be melting.
They need to be closer than that, the man said. I'm surprised you can heat it at all like that. Kairos looked down and brought his fingers much closer. He was no longer watching where he was aiming, but he kept the ether going in the same place it had been, so he was hopeful it would still be heating the bar. He heard a hissing sound and looked up, trying not to move his fingers. He saw the reddish-orange bar turn a bright orange, then white, then become a puddle. Then the puddle started to boil off.
Great Melithaw, Lord of Seas, what did you just do? The man said.
Kairos was not well-versed in nautical expletives, but he recalled that Melithaw was one of the ancient Garnevian gods. It did not tell him much about his rescuer, but at least he was classically educated.
More possibly a cultist, Kairos thought,
keeping himself honest. There was no use overlooking unpleasant possibilities.
I did as you asked, Kairos answered. I kept my fingers closer together.
Well, hurry up and do the same to the other three. I had thought we would be at this for some time, but it seems I underestimated you.
The stranger left for a moment as Kairos repeated the spell thrice more. His rescuer soon returned with his companion.
Kairos could make out little in the darkness outside, but the second of his rescuers seemed rather a large man. He also noted for the first time that there appeared to be a light rain falling outside. It hissed and steamed as it hit the spots where the iron bars of the cell had once been.
Get close and we will haul you out, the first rescuer instructed him, stepping aside so his stone-faced companion could appear at the window to grab him.
One moment, Kairos requested, and began another spell. Dinek, Iliaru, Estata, Pogulu, Benna, Tetka, Fenex, Riflaragna, he chanted quickly, finding it much easier without a gag in his mouth.
As he completed the hand-rubbing gesture, he felt a strange tingling throughout his body. Without warning, he fell through the plank bed he had been standing on. He stopped when he hit the dirt floor, not understanding why it felt solid while all else passed right through him. As planned, the shackles fell right through him as well, crashing onto the plank, which was now at thigh level, and actually within Kairos's incorporeal thigh. As an unexpected bonus, his clothing fell through him as well. Quickly dismissing the magic once he had a chance to step clear of the cluttered mess he had just made, Kairos hastily dressed himself and climbed back onto the bed. He reached up with his arms and carefully out the first hand's length of the window, avoiding the still scalding ends of the vaporized bars. The larger of his two rescuers grabbed his hands. Kairos braced a foot against the wall and tried his best to angle his head so it would go through without touching. With a sudden heave, Kairos was pulled through the window, scrambling up the wall with his feet as best he could to avoid banging his hips and knees as he went through. Despite taking a slight battering and scorching both his shirt and pants, Kairos was little worse for the wear on the other side. The falling rain felt good, even cleansing. He saw his two accomplices in the jailbreak. The leader was a lean, hard-looking man of middle years and much obvious hardship. He had the gleam in his eye of the type of person Kairos avoided sharing the same side of the street with, even in daylight. The one who had pulled him through the window resembled nothing so much as a wall of a person. Tall, wide, and solid, he seemed to be the epitome of what an ambitious wall aspires to.
Thank you, Kairos said.
He was unsure what else to say. His two rescuers were dressed all in black and had just murdered two men who were, even now, spreading pools of blood beneath them. It was not exactly in the knights in shining armor mold of a rescue, but he supposed he made for a poor maiden. While he regretted that the two constables had to die for him to be free, he was feeling a rather large surge in whatever organ regulates self-preservation, and was willing to overlook it, considering they seemed rather likely to be preparing him for a similar fate.
What now? Kairos asked.
It felt like a safe, non-committal question.
We have somewhere to get. Come on, the leader said, beckoning with one hand.
The other he kept against his side, likely concealing whatever blade had been used on the dead constables.
Where are we heading? Kyrus asked. The docks, the leader said. We're going to get on a ship and get far away from Acardia. You seem like you could use a new place to live. I have a place for you. Kyrus's mind skipped a beat. He had never been more than a week's travel by carriage from Scar Harbor. Golis was a long trek by his mind, and a fast rider could make it in less than a day. Can I stop at home and pack a few things? We have the time for it, but no. Your house turned into something of a gawking curiosity since you left a light on. We saw the glow on our way over here. Even at this hour, folks are likely to notice us if we got near the place. You get a fresh start, lad. Not everyone gets so lucky, the leader told him. Now move. Of all the places to discuss this, there are few worse than right here. The leader took him firmly by the arm as they slipped away down a side street, taking a long winding route through the city's worst neighborhoods to avoid notice. Kyrus supposed his new companions were like mountain guides, those curious folk who could walk up nearly sheer surfaces and who were essential companions for explorers
seeking the safe ways through the Skelton Peaks.
In this case, they were guiding him along the safe passes through the city. He supposed it was a bit of an unfair comparison, since in many ways the safest path was a knife's reach to either side of them, and moved with them. Not needing his eyes to guide him, Kyrus slipped into ether sight to check for pursuers and ambushes along their path. He mostly kept watch behind them, more worried about pursuit once his escape and associated murders were discovered than the prospect of being accosted in an alley while being escorted by two murderers, one of whom was apparently a minor sorcerer. There are a half dozen men around the next corner on the right, headed this way, Kyrus said. The leader did not question how he knew, but quickly backtracked them to a side street. They made a circle of the block in the opposite direction and kept moving. They could hear a number of voices. Apparently some sort of young ne'er-do-wells were gadding about and causing trouble. Kyrus supposed that on this occasion, he ought not be one to judge. Twice more on their route to the docks, Kyrus altered their course to avoid bystanders. The leader seemed to take it in stride, but Kyrus got the sense that his larger companion was a bit skeptical of how he was getting his insights. He hoped that the leader was in firm control, lest he end up with another witch hunt to flee from. Their immediate destination was a vacant warehouse near the northern side of the dock ward, close to the piers. Kyrus warned again of a number of men in their path, but this time, his warning was brushed aside. They're with us, the leader informed him. Everyone, he announced quietly, once they were close enough that everyone could hear his low tone. This is Mr. Kyrus Hinterdale. He is coming with us.
Aye, you got him out then, eh? One man said, then chuckled. Not bad, if I say so myself.
Excellent, most excellent. Welcome, Mr. Hinterdale, said one man who appeared to also be some kind of leader. Today you died in Acardia as witch. Tonight you are born again on the sea as a free man.
Kyrus took in the ragged, hard-eyed men that made up the group and wondered just what they were up to. We have no time for proper introductions on the way here, given the circumstances. I am Denric Zane, soon to be captain of that vessel just over yonder. He pointed out to a navy ship docked in the harbor. I know you for what you are, and I accept you as such. Now you know me for who I am, and I am giving you a chance to start a new life. Whatever you had here, they took it from you. Come with me and you shall become rich and powerful. You are a fugitive, as am I. Yesterday, you might have thought that you and I had little in common, but today I think you will find that we can use each other. I will take you in and you can use your magic to aid and protect me and my crew. Are you in? Kyrus was amid a dozen or so men, pirates, he supposed, and was nominally being offered a choice. What would happen if I said no? Would you slit my throat and dump me in the harbor?
We would hardly have to. Just leaving you behind is a death sentence, Denric said.
It seems I have little choice but to accept, Kyrus said.
Well now, you do have choices, and many more than you think. You could turn yourself in,
betray us and plead for leniency for helping recapture someone far more dangerous than yourself. You could sneak off, stow away on a trade ship, and hope to hide out until you get to Feru Maru to start a new life as a fisherman. You could disappear into the city, try and remake yourself as one of the shadow merchants hereabouts. You could even try using that magic of yours to burn the city down. You are raw, but you have a lot of power in you. No, what I offer you is not your only choice, but your only good, solid choice, Denric said. The Akkadian Navy took my ship and sank it, since none of theirs would sully themselves at the wheel of it. The Akkadian magistrates took 3 years of my life and kept me from all the wealth I had accumulated in my years at sea. Think about what they are taking from you, your home, your possessions, your livelihood. I am doing something about it. I am taking back what I can. I give you the opportunity to do the same, to take a new life to replace what you have lost. It will not be the same, but it is yours to make of it what you will. The same goes for the rest of you. Most of you had never tried a hand at piracy. Some have sailed ships, and some have killed and robbed for money. But all of you have the chance, tonight, to start anew.
I suppose I can give it a try, Kyra said, not making eye contact with Denric.
Piracy was not exactly what he had planned as an alternative to the gallows or the stake. Then again, what careers were available to someone deemed a witch and seen as a threat to the natural order of society merely for living?
Mr. Hinterdale, I see you think yourself a good man. I saw the way you looked at those dead guards at the jailhouse, like you'd never seen a dead body. You need to harden this in here.
Denric poked Kyrus in the chest. Or the world is going to chew you up and swallow you. The world comprises sharks and chum. We here are sharks.
I've seen death before.
I have killed more than you might guess.
I just never reveled in a man's death or blocked it from my heart, Kyrus said just above a whisper.
More loudly, he continued, but I suppose that will change in joining with you. Killing is easy enough, but I hope never to get used to it.
Kyrus was bluffing a bit, but he had all of Brannis's memories in him, and if he could draw on those experiences to give himself a measure of credibility among these shark-like men, he would do so.
Denric was taken aback a bit. He had always been a shrewd judge of men and could tell a liar better than most. The lad seemed to have as little guile as Andor, yet his claims seemed outrageous. Perhaps the good folk of Scar Harbor had reason enough to wish death on this witch after all, without even realizing it. Grosh had been keeping watch, but as the hour approached, everyone moved near the half-open warehouse door and waited for the signal. Kyrus was at the back of the group, along with Denric. Neither of them felt a particular need to watch. Denric because it was exactly the sort of thing that one had crews for, and Kyrus because he was just not that eager to go. They had explained the general thrust of the plan, and really that seemed to be about all there was to it. They were to wait for Mr. Stalyart's brother, one of the night watchmen on the ship, to give them a signal that meant he had eliminated the other man on watch duty with him. Then they would race onto the ship and overpower however many men were left on board, while the rest were drinking, gambling, and whoring the night away. Then they would sail off with the ship. It seemed far too simple to work, but when Kyrus considered the sort of men that were a party to this heist, he wondered how complex a plan they might carry out properly. Mr. Crispin gave a wave in their direction, the signal that all was prepared. Stalyart signaled back to Denric, and Captain Zane gave the order. Keep quiet and move quickly. No running, but keep it moving. The would-be pirates poured out of the warehouse, disorderly but with a single purpose among them. Their shoes clomped along on the wooden boards of the pier as they made their way to the gangplank, playing a percussive symphony. Kyrus was swept along in their wake, with only Denric behind him, taking up the rear guard position. Despite living in a port city for several years, Kyrus had never found reason to set foot on board a ship before. The gangplank was intimidating,
a long, narrow board with no handrails or ropes to hold on to. It was perhaps as wide as he was tall, but felt all the narrower for having nothing to catch himself on if he were to slip on the steep slope. There were wooden ribs at regular intervals, but Kairos found them to be less than comforting as a safety measure. Once he made it onto the deck, the small group had congregated around Stalyard's brother, Mr. Crispin. He was on watch duty, wearing his navy sailor's cap and heavy coat to keep out the chill. Tight to his body, he held a long knife, similar to the ones that the rest of the pirates were drawing all around him. It was an unnerving sight, even if logically Kairos knew that the last thing they planned was to drag him up here just to kill him. "The captain is asleep in his quarters," Crispin whispered as Denric, Stalyard, and a few others leaned in to listen. "The other watchman is in the head, dead. Crispin, lead the rest below decks. Forestall any alarm by acting as if you just came back from the shore and have your own men with you. Let surprise do most of the work for you," Denric said, and then set them off to take care of the crew. Kairos watched with a sense of dread and detachment as Tallmond, Marshfield, and a few others whose names he had not gathered yet all headed down to murder the crew. "Mr. Holyoke, Mr. Stalyard, get the ship free of her moorings, then raise the sails. Mr. Hinterdale, when the sails are up, can you raise the anchor?" Denric asked, honestly questioning his abilities rather than making the order optional just for him.
Of course. You do want me to do it with magic, right?
Otherwise I shall revise my answer," Kairos replied.
"Very well then, do it, as soon as I give the command or Stalyard does," Denric said.
Where is the anchor?" Kairos asked. He was entirely new to this, and while he knew what an anchor was, he did not know where on the ship it tied up, or bolted, or coiled, or whatever one did with them when they were not anchoring the ship.
"Starboard bow," Denric called back as he headed for the rear of the ship, where the captain's cabin lay.
Kairos looked on as Holyoke and Stalyard went around with small axes and hacked away at the moorings. He wondered if he ought to ask them if he was correct in thinking that starboard was the right side of the ship. He knew that the bow was the front. Kairos heard someone down below on the docks notice that something was amiss, and all thought of asking for clarification fled his mind.
"Hey, what you doing up there?" he heard.
Kairos rushed to the side of the ship to see what was happening. A man in navy sailor's garb was sprinting down the pier back toward the taverns and brothels, where presumably he would find his fellows and rally them against the intruders. Kairos grew worried. He was now caught between the Icardian Navy and Captain Zane, the Captain Zane, and things seemed headed for a collision. The thought flickered in his mind to possibly sell out the pirates and try his luck with the magistrates again, but it never took hold.
"No, whether I like it or not, they have made me their enemy. I will find no comfort with them. These may be wicked men. No, these are wicked men I find myself with, but only for now. I will ride out this storm and see where I come out of it. If Captain Zane has magic, I will learn it, and I will get myself the skills I will need to rid myself of his company. I will swallow this bitter elixir and hope that it will cure me rather than kill me."
Kairos moved quickly to Stalyard's side.
"We have been found out. Hurry, and I will do what I can to delay them."
"Very good, Mr. Hinterdale. You earn a place here," Stalyard said.
Stalyard moved to the rigging after cutting the last of the moorings. Along with Holyoke, they were making good time in getting the ship prepared for a hasty departure. Suddenly there was a shout from the end of the pier. Kairos crouched low and looked over the bulwark, doing his best to avoid being seen. There looked to be about 2 dozen men, navy from the uniforms most wore, making all haste for the gangplank. Kairos had promised to do what he could to hold them off, and he knew he had little time to act.
"Haru bidesi lioki quatuan gelora,"
and Kairos swept his hands up. He had managed to lift furniture in his shop when the constables arrived to arrest him. Captain Zane had been impressed with how strong his iron melting spell had been. It was time for Kyrus to see just how much he could squeeze out of his powers. As the first of the sailors was about to set foot on the gangplank, it was yanked from beneath him. With a yelp and a splash, one fewer assailant was trying to board. Kyrus lifted the plank and twisted it in the air, orienting it crossways to the pier and up on its side. He held it at thigh height to keep it above the piles and began moving it down the length of the pier, sweeping men out of its path. Kyrus angled it slightly so that it scraped the mob of sailors off the far side of the pier and into the water. A few of the more nimble ones managed to duck under it as it passed, and several more retreated back down the pier, but many were dumped unceremoniously into the harbor. Kyrus, despite his fears, could not help but enjoy using his magic openly and to such great effect. He swept the gangplank back down the pier in the other direction, spinning it as it went, knocking even the more nimble of the sailors into the water. A shot rang out, and the wood of the bulwark just to Kyrus's right splintered.
"Well, fun time seems to be over."
He ducked back down behind cover.
"Is that gangplank ours, Mr. Stalyart?" Kyrus shouted across the deck.
"Anything is ours if we wish to take it," Stalyart shouted back.
It was a poetic bit of optimism, but unhelpful. Kyrus supposed that if gangplanks were supposed to remain with the pier, then they could just throw it overboard later. He recalled it and set it down on the deck a few feet from himself.
"Captain, we are under sail," Stalyart shouted.
All pretense of stealth was gone now. The ship had lurched and begun to slowly inch away from its berth. Stalyart and Holyoke were working frantically to raise more sails, having just one to catch wind thus far. No one was yet at the helm, and they appeared to be banking a very mild turn as they got underway. Captain Zane came sprinting up from the rear castle of the ship.
"Mr. Hinterdale, get that anchor up now," he shouted.
"Oops, anchor, right."
Kyrus rushed over to the bow and found the chain that headed out the side of the ship and into the harbor. While no nautical expert was he, Kyrus nonetheless knew what an anchor was. He grabbed for the chain, the only way he knew how.
"Aru, Bidesi, Lioki, Quatuan, Gelora,"
and up it came. He had to cast the spell twice more to get a grip farther down and bring the anchor safely to rest. There was a great thunderous crash as he let the chains drop to the deck.
"Mr. Hinterdale, get up here," Captain Zane shouted again.
He had taken the wheel and was guiding the freed ship out of its berth at roughly a walking pace.
"Look over there.
The Navy crew are commandeering that merchant ship in the next berth. They mean to take up pursuit. That ship is armed, and we do not have enough men to put up a fight yet. I will show you this once, then you use it on the sails.
Ihu, Dolcavi, Esfenetor, Gelex, Ajihru."
And Captain Zane thrust one hand forward, palm facing out, with his fingers spread and making a claw-like gesture. Kyrus watched and thought maybe he felt a little breeze. Based on the captain's comment about using it on the sails, he could only assume it was to make wind.
"So this is how it will be. You need something done and you will show me a spell for it. How much are you going to hold back?"
Kyrus nodded to affirm that he had gotten it, and Captain Zane took the wheel again in both hands. He looked over and saw that there was a riot of activity on the vessel on their left, port, side, and the ship certainly looked formidable. Kyrus could see the little trap doors where the cannons hid in the sides, and the sails looked very large and suited for wind catching. Their own ship was a Navy vessel, though, and ought to be just as formidable. It might not be running with a full crew, but Kyrus supposed that was why they seemed so glad to have him along.
"I will show them," Kyrus thought,
starting to feel a bit of self-confidence.
"I will show them that they would not be able to manage without me."
"Ihu, Dolcavi, Esfenetor, Gelex, Ajihru,"
chanted Kyrus loudly,
mimicking Captain Zane's thrusting claw hand action.
Kyrus made sure to pull hard on the ether as he finished the spell, funneling as much power into it as he could manage. From nowhere, a gale sprang, catching the sail,
which had been slack in the light breeze, and snapping it taut. There was a great and ominous creak of wood straining, and the bow of the ship lifted up as the ship accelerated unnaturally. Kairos lost his footing and stumbled against the pillar that supported the wheel. Kairos was not finished, though. He was tired and scared, and was suddenly finding an outlet for all the frustration and hopelessness he had found since his capture. He hurried to the port side of the ship and tried something he had been curious about. For all the dangers it was supposed to carry, he figured that there was plenty of water handy to absorb any mistakes. Kairos leaned out over the railing and extended both hands out toward the merchant vessel that they were starting to pull away from. He did not know if the gesture helped any, but it felt right. Kairos drew in any and all ether he could manage. The normal cool rush of it burned instead as it tore through him, but it did oh so much more once he released it. A massive gout of flame poured across the expanse separating the two ships and rolled up into the rigging and sails. He stopped short of raking the decks with flame. Angry as he was still not a killer at heart, despite the company he had accepted. "Mr. Hinterdale, if you do not mind me asking, why did we need to rescue you?" Captain Zane asked, clearly taken aback by a display of sorcery that was unheard of in his experience. "That was my backup plan. I was not about to go to the gallows without a fight," Iris bragged. He sincerely hoped that in light of the conflagration he had just unleashed, no one would notice the fact that he was shaking. Over the next few minutes, men emerged from below decks, and several helped to get the sails set and rigged properly. Stalyard took over the wheel as Captain Zane took reports on the execution of their plan. On the whole, they had suffered only minor injuries. There had been a slaughter below, as Mr. Crispin's ruse had gotten them to within striking distance, with knives out, before the crew had even realized something was amiss. 8 men had been taken prisoner, and the rest were all dead. Before he took over the wheel, Captain Zane had gone into the captain's quarters and knocked out Captain Ranison. They went back in after to tie him up. There was no evidence of sabotage or damage to the ship, and there were plenty of supplies stored aboard. The ship had been preparing to leave port in just 2 more days. Dawn broke and found Captain Zane a free and contented man. He stood on the deck of his own ship, so new that he had not yet decided on a name for it. He had considered just naming it the Honest Merchant and carrying on as if he had never lost the original, but he knew the name would always ring hollow to him if he did. Taking a deep breath of the sea air on a clear morning, he turned to survey the prisoners. There were 9 in all, 8 common sailors and 1 captain, standing in a row by the starboard bulwark. Captain Ranison was stripped to his underclothes as Dinric had appropriated his wardrobe and given it to Grosh to make alterations. The former captain was also the only one bound, with his hands tied behind his back. The whole crew was on deck, except for Holyoke at the wheel and Kairos. The hero of their escape had taken to his new quarters on the pretense of exhaustion and had shut himself in. He had commandeered one of the senior officers' cabins, making it only himself, Mr. Stalyard, and the captain who had deluxe accommodations. The minor officers' quarters were generally 2s and 4s, and there were enough of those to go around that none of the crew had to bunk where the Navy's common sailors had slept. "Good morning, gentlemen. I imagine that after last night's events, you were all surprised and perhaps grateful to be alive," Captain Zane said, speaking loudly enough that all could hear him. "Well, today I'm in a magnanimous mood. I have a new ship and a fresh crew and the rolling sea beneath my feet again. As you may notice, we are short-handed. I may go so far as to offer you gentlemen jobs. But first, I would like to deal with the issue of your Captain Ranison. I imagine that if you spend long enough aboard a ship, you may come to resent your captain, perhaps even bear him a grudge. It may even be the case that despite your own tenuous situation, that you are enjoying seeing him squirm," Dinric said. though in truth he believed that the old captain's stoicism was very dignified and rather admirable. So I offer my pistol, loaded, to the man who would take his captain's life. I shall not question your motive. Your reason you may keep to yourself. He offered the pistol, handle foremost, to each of the 8 men in turn. None of the men moved. I see. So none of you has a grudge you would like to settle today. To end this man's life by your own hand? Denric asked. Very well, then. Denric then grabbed Captain Ranison by the shoulder, pushed him against the railing, and shot the man himself. He leaned on the stricken Ranison and heaved him over the railing. No one but Captain Zane saw him hit the water, but all heard the splash. It was like a punctuation mark at the end of their hijacking. In the end, each of the 8 men was dumped in the water. Denric had asked Mr. Crispin about each of them, and he was unwilling to vouch for any. Disappointed, but certainly grateful that Crispin was a hard enough man to let them all die rather than take a chance, Captain Zane set his crew and headed for the meeting spot to transfer men and supplies from Stalyart's merchant ship. It would still be a small crew, but they would work that out in due time. In an elegantly appointed office in the heart of Golis, Lord Harwick opened the message he had just received. It had been delivered by horse just moments before by a messenger from Scar Harbor, who had claimed it was of utmost urgency. The man had ridden well into the night to reach Golis, but had been stopped cold by Lord Harwick's own assistants, who would not be persuaded to rouse the aging magistrate in the night for anyone short of the king or high counselor. Lord Harwick adjusted his spectacles and read through it. The secretary who had brought the message in watched Lord Harwick's eyebrow raise at first, then saw his brow furrow. After a moment, he saw the lord's face redden.
"Clarcy, do you know what this is?" Lord Harwick demanded.
Clarcy knew enough that his lordship was angry, but not with him.
"No, your lordship. What is it?"
Clarcy played along. Lord Harwick was a good man and a keen jurist, so he could be forgiven his occasional theatrics. "Those superstitious bumpkins in Scar Harbor have found someone guilty of witchcraft. They want me to convince the king to make an exception to the moratorium on executions. And of all people, Kyrus Hinterdale, an expert in the Scrivener's Guild. Same lad who put Lord Kendallane's treatise on chess into publication. I have a copy of it myself. If that lad is a threat to the society, then I am one of His Majesty's hunting hounds. Put an order together, Clarcy. I want expert Hinterdale brought up here and given a new trial, and I want Lord Lionsvane up here as well to explain himself. Oh, and draft up something for the council, recommending we strike that silly witchcraft law from the books. It is a farce that we still have that on the record. That poor boy. I shall see to it that he is cleared of this ridiculous charge." Once his assistant had left the room, Harwick took up his pipe and clamped it firmly in his mouth. He leaned back in his armchair and laced his fingers behind his head. With no one else observing him, a tiny flame sparked unbidden, lighting his pipe.